Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Syosset Library Turn the Page podcast here, and this is Evelyn from the Readers Services for the Syosset Library, and we also have with us
Jessica from the Community Engagement Specialist and Librarian at Syosset Library.
And our very special guest today is
Catherine Senator.
One of my favorite authors. I love your book so much. I think the first one I read was Things You Save in a Fire. And then after I read that one, I read How to Walk Away. And then I've been lucky enough to be gifted the new one that comes out in July, What You Wish For.
Hooray!
Which is about a librarian.
Yes, it is.
We wish for more books about librarians.
Librarians are the best.
Thank you.
What I hear and read, your mother was a librarian.
Yeah, you know.
A librarian.
My mom has a master's in library science, and her plan was to become a librarian. She never actually worked in a paid capacity in a library because she had a bunch of little kids, and then before she could go back to work, as she was sort of planning to do when she had us all in school, her dad died, and she wound up taking over his company instead and becoming a landlord for some office buildings, which was not at all what she had planned to do. But they were actually kind of cool office buildings because my grandfather built them in Houston in the 50s. And they were the office buildings where NASA had their offices before there was NASA.
Oh, cool.
Oh, wow.
So my mom got to meet all those early astronauts. And
oh, that's fabulous.
But she never, when I was a child, she wound up doing that job until she retired, actually. But she did constantly take us to the library and volunteer at our school library. And it was always kind of her love. And so that's, you know, she's the personality of a librarian, even though that was never technically what she did for a living. And she has an MLS. From UT, University
of wonderful.
Texas.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So why don't you tell us about what life is like for you in quarantine and how are you going to promote your new book that comes out in July, What You Wish For?
Quarantine is kind of crazy. So I'm in Houston, Texas, and our governor has released everyone to kind of go back outside, but I don't think that's a great idea. So we're staying in, and in a way, I'm kind of doing sort of like the opposite of social distancing right now, even though I am staying home and quarantined, because normally my two teenagers and my husband, who's a teacher, he's a middle school teacher, they leave during the day and I get the house to myself. You know, it's my office, and the dog goes to sleep and I just kind of work all day and can concentrate. But now everybody's here with me. So I've got two teenagers and a husband who's been teaching Zoom classes at the dining room table, and a very needy dog. You know, her emotional landscape has been quite altered by the pandemic because she cannot sleep with all of us in the house. We're too fun. We're too exciting. So she's just awake staring at us all day long instead of taking her, you know, 11-hour nap.
Right, like mine.
So dog?
She's a mix. She was a rescue dog. She looks like a little tiny sheepdog. She's
about 3 pounds.
And if we don't trim her like eye fur, it grows over her eyes. And she's got a great mustache that looks like the Lorax. And she's yellow and very loving. She's like a big licker. She's a high licker. We're very fond of the dog, but yeah, she needs a lot of rest, and we are disturbing her sacred napping time by all of us being in the house and making noise. So it's been kind of crazy. I love being at home, actually. I mean, I'm normally in my normal life, I'm never happier than when I don't have to leave the house or go anywhere. So in a lot of ways, this stay home stuff works very well for me. I'm like in my pajamas all day. But I am having a little trouble concentrating. I'm feeling very scattered. You know, I think that's a little bit of a mom thing, you know, when your kids are around, it's just hard to fully turn your attention to something else. So I've been goofing around on social media quite a bit, and I've been doing lots of book clubs and podcasts and fun stuff like this, but I have not done any writing since the pandemic started at all. And I'm not even sure how I'm going to do that. Like, at some point I'll need to start doing that, but I don't even know how I'm going to concentrate.
That seems to be a continuing theme with the authors that we're speaking to.
Really? Yeah.
Well, I had a hard time getting into a book, but the first one I was able to read, and I thank you for that, is What You Wish For. So that got me started on my
And Evelyn devours books. So I can't imagine her not being able to get
into books. I did. I had a hard time.
Yeah.
It was very difficult.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been having trouble reading since the pandemic, actually. Yeah.
It's just... Well, I can recommend a couple of good books for you.
Oh, great.
What You Wish For. No, but I did hear you say what you were planning on writing about and how you had to put that on hold. So you want to tell everybody?
Sure. Yeah. That's a sort of funny comic tragic story. So I was, for about the past 6 months, I've been working on a new book that I've been, I hadn't physically started writing yet, but I had been brainstorming and taking a lot of notes and just kind of, you know, I think of when you're kind of getting ready to write a story as almost like, it's almost like you put all the ingredients in a slow cooker and then you just kind of turn it on and let it kind of like everything sort of cook together. And so everything was in the slow cooker and I was thinking on this story and I was developing the plot. And actually some of the characters were really getting very real to me and I was getting super excited to write about them and see what they were going to do. But I wound up shelving this whole book because of the pandemic, because it was set on a cruise ship. And, you know, at the time that I had the idea, which was like over a year ago, you know, I'm always trying to think of locations for books that would be interesting to sort of spend time in, you know, or like intriguing to visit. Appealing in some way. So, I've got one book that's set in the backwoods of Wyoming. I've got a book that's set on Cape Ann near Boston. I've got this new book, What You Wish For, is set on Galveston Island on the coast of Texas. And, you know, but I do think about locations when I'm starting to kind of write a book because it's like, I want to make sure that I set it in a place that people would be kind of interested to go and spend some time. And for me, the cruise ship idea was a place I thought people might be interested to go and spend some time. Although I think that's totally changed now, right? With the pandemic, like that is probably the last place anybody wants to go now. Somebody I was talking to was like, you could still set a story on a cruise ship. I was like, yeah, a horror story, maybe. Definitely not.
I feel like once the pandemic is sort of past us, I feel like everyone who wants to write a horror story is going to be like, here's my idea, horror story on a cruise ship. And it's going to be like, you know, like when you have a year where almost all the movies are like the same. I feel like it's all going to be like that. So
I'm definitely gonna try to come up with something else. In fact, I have a new idea that's, it's very tender and it's not really ready for me to share it yet, but I do have something that I'm working on that I think might be really great. And it is as far away from coronavirus as it could possibly be, because I really do think that by the time this book comes out, which would be in a year or, I mean, maybe longer, just depending on how long it takes to write it, we are all gonna be so sick of the coronavirus. Like we're gonna just be, I know I'm gonna be desperately looking for escape.
But not to read about the coronavirus, right? People are gonna wanna read. Happy love stories, like you write. Nice.
Just, yeah, something else. Yeah.
I've been to Galveston. I went to Houston and Galveston in 1979 in my senior year of high school. I've been there. Yeah, it was very nice.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say Galveston is a really interesting town because it's got this super fascinating history, because Galveston used to be the biggest city in Texas. And it was like, it was basically like the Ellis Island of the South, like people who were immigrating to Texas and the South work. They sailed through the Gulf of Mexico and they came through Galveston. So it was this, and it was this huge shipping port, and it was this really wealthy city kind of in the Victorian era. And I mean, it was the city, you know. And then this huge hurricane came along in 1900 and just decimated the city and killed like 12,000 people in one night. And
wow,
there's actually a really great book about it if you're ever in the mood for like a true history read that really reads like a novel. It's called Isaac's Storm,
right?
Eric Larson.
And we like Eric Larson.
He's been a guest on the podcast, and he's very, yeah, his books are great. The way that he writes nonfiction,
yes,
is seamless. With
Isaac Storm, you're kind of reading along, and then all of a sudden, boom, like it's 5 a.m. and you forgot to sleep because you were just flipping those pages. So yeah, so it's a great town. Galveston is a kind of Victorian city. I mean, there's all this really great sort of carpenter Gothic architecture, and there's buildings all around that are called storm survivors that, you know, didn't get washed away in the storm. And it's got this kind of charming cobblestone vibe to it, but it also has gone through a lot of hard times. I mean, that was not the only hurricane to hit Galveston, and they've, you know, I kind of love the town because it's got a lot of sort of scrappy resilience to it. You know, they just kind of keep on keeping on, and I love that about them. And it's also the beach that I grew up going to. You know, if you live in Houston, that's your beach. You just jump on Interstate 45 and zip on to, actually, I-45 ends on Galveston Island. So you just drive to the end of the freeway and boom, you're at the beach.
Right. And you like to write while you're there, right? Is that?
Yeah, that's right. I'm a very, like, I don't know. I think I've got some mom stuff where, like, when my kids are anywhere near me, it's very hard for me to concentrate on anything else. And they're not even little anymore, actually. One's 14 and one's 17. But it's just, I don't know, some kind of mom radar. It's hard for me to shift it. I think of writing stories, writing novels, almost as getting, like, you have to, like, get in a little raft. You know, you have to walk down to the end of a dock and get in a little raft and untie that raft from the dock. And you have to, like, float out into the sea of your imagination. And when my kids are around, it's very hard for me to untie myself from that dock. I feel like I need to stay at the dock in case anybody needs me. And so one of the habits that I've fallen into, you know, trying to write and be a mom at the same time, is when I have a deadline coming up or when I need to get a chunk of writing done, I leave Houston and I drive down to Galveston. My mom has a beach house. It's really more of like a shack. It's like a beach shack down on the water. Well, it's not on the water, but you can see the water if you stand on tiptoe and kind of angle your head at just the right.
It's close enough.
That's level. Good. Yeah. you can tell that the water is there. And so I'll go down there for like 4 or 5 days and just, you know, kind of detach myself from all the responsibilities of reality. And we've got a whole big family rule that nobody's allowed to call me. Like, unless somebody is on fire or in the hospital, you're not allowed to call me, because as soon as I know that somebody is sick, I immediately can't concentrate anymore and want to come back to town. Fortunately, that's very rarely happened. I mean, one of my kids got a cold while I was away, but they survived. Their dad took good care of them. But what's great about that is that when I go away for a while, and when I'm not interrupted, I can build this crazy momentum, you know? And that is how, honestly, that's how I prefer to do everything. Like, I'm a very kind of like obsessive, one thing at a time kind of a person. Like, when I'm reading a book, all I want to do is read that book. You know, I want to start in the morning and read until I'm done and not have to eat or anything. And when I'm writing a book, the same thing is kind of true. But of course, writing a book takes longer than reading a book, and life doesn't really let you not take breaks from that. But I find that when I am not interrupted, I can write huge amounts in a very short time. Like, I can do, you know, 100, 150 pages in like a 4-day trip down to the beach, because it snowballs, you know, it just kind of builds on itself. And I'll wake up in the morning, I'll make a pot of coffee, I will sit down on the sofa with my laptop, start writing, and before I know it, it's dark outside.
Oh my gosh.
Writing
all
day.
That's great.
Yeah. I think you need a trip to get yourself writing again.
I've been feeling very much like I cannot untie myself from the dock lately, because I definitely feel like everybody
for sure. Yeah.
Thanks to me right now. It's great.
I have to ask, because I read, and I know you're not supposed to believe everything you read on the internet, but I read that you used to write Duran Duran fan fiction.
Oh yeah. That's
awesome. That's super true. Yeah. Awesome.
That is how I got started writing, actually. It was in, I think I invented fan fiction. You know, this is the 80s. That didn't even really exist.
It's really interesting now, because when I first started hearing about fan fiction, it was something a lot of people did, but like they didn't really like admit to each other that they did it. And now everyone's like, of course I write fan fiction. I wrote fan fiction. This story is actually based on a fan fiction, and everybody is more accepting of it. So I found that amazing.
Yeah. So the fan fiction that I wrote about Duran Duran, I did when I was in the sixth grade.
Oh, wow.
And it was my first novel, and, you know, quote unquote novel. It was in a spiral notebook. And here's the thing. This is how it all got started. I was very, very awkward in sixth grade, you know, as everybody is in the sixth grade. And I had, you know, braces top and bottom and crisscross rubber bands and giant buck teeth and like a terrible 80s hairdo with like, you know, a mullet. And, you know, I was kind of a disaster, you know, and I knew it. That's the thing. I think everybody's kind of a disaster at that age, but some people are kind of more aware of it than other people. And my antenna was very high, and I was just so apologetic. You know, I just spent that whole year just kind of hunched over an apology, like, I'm sorry. You know, like, I know there is no excuse for this situation, but I just didn't know how to fix it. You know, I didn't know how to be less awkward. And so I was just kind of suffering, you know, and I was doing that thing that is very, very common for girls as they kind of start that transition from being little kids into being teenagers and then women, where I was just criticizing myself like all day long. Like every thought that I had about myself at that age was just basically like a laundry list of all the things that were wrong with me and all the things that I needed to fix and, you know, all the things that I felt bad about. And it was a really sort of depressing, not very fun way to exist in the world. But I didn't really know how to do anything about any of it. Like, I can guarantee you that I was super awkward in sixth grade because my older sister actually staged an intervention with my mom where she was like, you have got to take her to the mall and get her some better clothes. She is bringing down the entire family. It was bad, objectively. But the lucky thing about sixth grade was that I had two best friends who were also awkward and also miserable. And we were all like crazy in love with Duran Duran. And we got this idea that we should write novels about meeting them. And we should cast ourselves as the main characters in the novels. And so that's what we did. You know, we would just suffer through the school week as only sixth grade girls can suffer. And then on the weekends, we would get together and like put on our PJs and have sleepovers and like pile into somebody's bed and read our novels to each other in installments. And my novel was, here's what happened in my novel. Duran Duran was driving through my neighborhood in their stretch limo on their way to a concert when they got a flat tire. And this was the 1980s, and so there were no cell phones, and so they had to find a landline to call a tire guy, and so they walked up to the closest front door, which in the story just happened to be my front door, and I just happened to be home at the time watching MTV and busting my dance moves to their Hungry Like the
Wolf. That's so great.
You know? That's amazing.
So I open the door. I find all five band members of Duran Duran standing on my front stoop, and I let them in and I let them use the phone. And then I don't really know what was going on with the tire guy that day, but he was like super busy, couldn't get there right away. So I wound up spending several hours hanging out with Duran Duran in the living room. Several magical hours, because by the end of those hours, all five of them had fallen in love with me. And then that was the plot. You know, I had to spend the rest of the novel deciding who to marry.
Oh my God. And did you get to go to the concert for free? Ah. Did you get into?
You know, that would have been a perk had it been a real story. I never went to a Duran Duran concert until adulthood. I mean, I went when I was like maybe 37 or something. I was like, I need closure. Well, we had, you know, a movie that got made of one of my
And we want to hear all about
yeah,
that.
Let's talk about that. Husband.
And that, you know, that got canceled. I mean, it didn't. It's it online. So it's still out there. You can see it. But we were going to have, you know, it was going to open in theaters all across the country. We were going to have a premiere. All that stuff got canceled. So,
well, how about telling us all about your part in the movie?
Yeah. So, okay. So,
and who the the star of the show is, that handsome man.
So this is my fourth novel, and it's called The Lost Husband, and it got turned into a movie starring Josh Duhamel and Leslie Bibb. And yeah, the folks who made the movie very kindly invited me to come out and be an extra in one of the scenes in the movie. So if you watch it, you can spot me at the farmer's market looking very uncomfortable, because it turns out I cannot act. And I didn't learn that till I was actually on the movie set. I was like, wow, I'm terrible at this. But yeah, we got to drive out to Austin. This was the day after Halloween in 2018. And I got to take my two kids, and I got to take mom, and I got to take my husband. And we got to spend a day at a real farmer's market in Austin that was obviously closed to be a movie set that day. And it was very thrilling. I mean, I have to say, I got to meet Leslie Bibb. I got to meet several of the other actors. And then, of course, I got to meet Josh Duhamel, which was really fun in theory. He's a lovely person. He's super, super nice. But he is so handsome that it is, like, physically uncomfortable to be around him. Like, you don't even know what to do with yourself. Like, it just feels really weird. Like, and he was so friendly, you know, like, he met me, and he, you know, knew that I had written the novel, and so he sort of was trying to make, like, pleasant chit chat with me, and he was like, you know, so you wrote the novel, and I was like, you know, like, I couldn't even speak, and speaking is, like, my favorite activity on the planet. Like, I am a talker from a long line of talkers, but it was like, he was so handsome. It like robbed you of the power of speech. You just sort of went mute, you know.
He's really tall.
Oh my God, he's 15 feet tall. He's huge. You've just never seen anything like it. And so basically, like, he would ask me polite questions, and all I could do was just, like, make gurgling noises. Like, I couldn't even articulate any words. And all the women on the set were just fascinated by it, because we were all just like, God, he must be so lonesome. Nobody can talk to him. Like, we're all just frozen by his handsomeness. But the director told us, no, he's not lonesome. He's fine. But yeah, it was really fun. It's so weird to be around Josh Duhamel, because he's such a movie star. Your body feels weird. You sort of feel like a rotisserie chicken at the grocery store. Like, you feel like crack, like your skin gets all crackly and hot, and you don't know what to do with yourself. But it was
I've been watching him since all my children days.
Yeah. He's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what else? He's like, he's really good. I mean, he's a great actor. You know, he makes it look so easy that I think you might not call it, it doesn't call attention to the craft of it. But a lady on Instagram posted a video of him kissing Leslie Bibb. There's kind of an epic kiss that happens at the farmer's market. I was there on the day that they were filming the scene. I was an extra in the scene. I was like 8 feet away, and they did like, I don't know, a bunch of takes, maybe seven takes of this one kiss. And I was so excited when they were filming it, because I just kept thinking to myself, you know, I invented that kiss. Like, that kiss exists because of me, but I could not watch it. You know, because I was supposed to be a totally disinterested person in the background. So I couldn't just like turn and stare and be like, oh, adorable. So I had to not look. You know, I would hear them giving their dialogue, and then it would get quiet, and I would think, oh my God, they're kissing, but I can't look. And so I didn't actually get to see that kiss until I saw the actual movie. And it is so magnificent. I mean, I'm kind of like a little bit of like a connoisseur of movie kisses. Some are better than others. And it's magnificent. He should get an Oscar, like a best kiss Oscar for that kiss. It's phenomenal. And yeah, now that this woman has this lovely, hilarious person on Instagram posted just the clip of when he sort of grabs Leslie Bibb by her overalls and plants this great kiss on her, I've had an opportunity to see it a few times on a loop. And I'm like, yeah, that man is a genius. He's an acting genius.
I'm just like scrolling through pictures of him now, because as you're talking about this, I'm like, I just want to see him.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. And he just, you know, he really kind of lights up the movie. You know, he's just got this sort of ease and this kind of magnetism that is really great for the movie. He's wonderful in it. Yeah. They all are. I mean, it's such a beautiful movie. I mean, I want to say that the cinematography is phenomenal. It looks like my Texas. You know, I went to college in New York, but wow. I'm from Texas, but I went to Vassar College in Poughkeepsie. When I got to college, you know, all these kids who were not from Texas immediately wanted to know if I rode a horse to school, you know, did I have a cactus in my front yard? And I realized that for a lot of people, there's a kind of cartoonish idea of Texas in their mind. And that's fine. I love the cartoon too, actually. Texas has a lot of, you know, fun cliches about it that are great. But my actual Texas is very lush and very green, and there's big oak trees, and it's not a desert, you know, full of cacti. And so it was really fun to kind of see the filmmakers capture my Texas. Like when I think of Texas, that Texas in the movie is what I think of. And so that was really fun. You know, there was a moment early on when they were getting all the funding together and working on the project when they feared that they might have to film in Louisiana, because it's actually cheaper to film in Louisiana because they give you these great tax credits that Texas does not offer. So you can get like $1 million back on your movie in these tax credits. And I was like, you can't film in Louisiana. That's not going to look like the Texas Hill Country. They're like, we'll make it work if we have to. But they worked really hard. It was really a goal of theirs to actually set it in Texas, and they did manage to make it work. So that was really fun.
Did you have any screen? You didn't do the screenplay, did you? Did you do any writing of that?
No, yeah, that wasn't me. They adapted it. It was the director, Vicky White. She is the person who spearheaded this whole project. She was the director, and she also adapted the book into a screenplay. So,
have you written any screenplays at all?
Well, thank you for asking. When I was a lot younger, I thought that I might, I actually had a moment when I thought I might move to LA and try to write for TV. And I had a friend who was writing for all these great shows. She still writes for great shows. And she was like, come to LA. It's so fun to be a writer in LA. And I thought about it. And so I did some work teaching myself how to write screenplays and how to write TV scripts. And I, you know, submitted them to some little contests, and I got some little encouragement from that. But then I got married, and then I got pregnant, and then I thought to myself, I think I want to stay home to raise my kids. Like, now that I'm having babies, I think actually I might need my mom to help me, and I might want to just stay here. So I did not wind up moving to LA, and I decided to write novels instead. I mean, writing novels was always kind of the goal, but, you know, there were many, many periods on this long journey of discouragement, you know, when I thought, oh, this isn't working out. And so then I would think, well, what else can I do with my writing skills? And TV was one of my options as I kind of tried to think it through.
And what year was your first book published?
So I published my first book in 2007. Okay. So I've been around a while. This new book, What You Wish For, is my 8th novel. I did 4 with Random House, and I've now done 4 with St. Martin's Press and Macmillan. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was a really long kind of journey from that Duran Duran novel. What I will say about my Duran Duran novel is, even though it is very embarrassing and it's terrible, like it's the worst novel ever written. Even though I have like had a serious talk with my older sister that if like I'm ever hit by a bus, like her number one job is to go up in the attic and find that novel and burn it so it never sees the light of day. I'm like, don't go to the funeral, get to the attic, find the novel. It also, at the same time that it's the worst novel ever written, it's also kind of genius. You know, it's kind of the idea of the novel is kind of great, because I was so mean to myself at that age. And yet I kind of rescued myself. I kind of saved myself by writing this story, you know? I did not have one kind word to say to myself at that age, but somehow I managed to write a story filled with imaginary world-famous rockers who could say all the encouraging and kind things to me that I refused to say to myself. And that right there, like, that was the moment when I first sort of got this taste of, like, the magic of fiction, like that particular magic that fiction offers that almost nothing else in human life can give you. And I've spent, you know, like a lifetime trying to kind of articulate what that is, or like study what that is, figure out what that is, learn how to harness that magic. And one really important piece of it is this. When you engage with a piece of fiction, you know, when you're reading a novel or binge watching something or, you know, watching a movie, if they've done their job right with the story, you know that it's not true. You know, you recognize intellectually that it's fiction, but you believe it anyway. You know it's not true, but you believe it anyway. In the context of the story, you believe it anyway. That's how you can watch a movie, and this happened to me not that long ago, where a dog dies, and you're sobbing your face off about the dog, even though you recognize intellectually that that dog was an actor dog. You know, that
it's still alive
and it's fine, right? It's fine. They film the scene and then the dog gets up and they give it a treat and it trots away. Like, the dog is fine. But in the context of the story, the dog has just died. And you can hold those two true things in your head at the same time. And it allows you to feel so moved. You know, it's kind of a safe way to let your emotions loose, right? I mean, stories are kind of this original virtual reality where we can kind of go into our imaginations and struggle with and grapple with and face things that we need to struggle with and grapple with and face, you know, in a kind of a safer context than real life. They're just great. They're great teaching tools. And for me, that Duran Duran story, enabled me to kind of see some hope for myself, you know, see some possibilities for my own life. And I've held on to that ever since. Like, that is still, I mean, on some very basic level, I'm not still writing about Duran Duran, but I am still kind of writing the same type of stories that are hopeful and engaging and funny and fun and a pleasure, you know,
but right.
Teach you things that you maybe would like to learn.
Well, we thank you for writing those great stories.
And thank you for spending this time.
We're so happy. I'm so glad you were so quick to respond to me. And thank you so much, Catherine. I love reading your stories. I look forward to going back and reading some of the ones I haven't read yet. And
thank
we just want to thank you for being with us. So we're going to have to end this chapter of Turn the Page. So this is Evelyn. And we have
Jessica. And
our special guest,
Catherine. Thank you guys so much for hosting me.
Thank you for having us. We really, really appreciate it.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.